Yes.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, Your Honors. I've requested 5 minutes for rebuttal from the clerk and make that request to Your Honors. We know you've all read the brief, so I'm going to go right to the heart of the case. The heart of the case is embodied in EEOC's federal regulations, which provide for what EEOC does when it has information that it obtained pursuant to the Age Discrimination Act. In 56 federal regulations, 10,889-90, EEOC describes the records that it will obtain during an age discrimination investigation. And after describing these documents under routine uses of what it does with the records, it states, quote, these records and information in these records may be used, quote, A, to disclose pertinent information to a federal, state, or local agency or third parties as may be appropriate or necessary to perform the Commission's functions under the Age Discrimination and Employment Act. There are other routine uses, but that enough establishes the issue here, that EEOC discloses confidential information without notice to third parties if it is deemed by EEOC to be appropriate or necessary.
Is that your complaint, that they release it without notice, or is your complaint a more general one? That they don't provide, that in fact they do release trade secrets information without providing you an opportunity to say it shouldn't be released.
It's notice. We're not asking for the decision to be made at the. All we're asking for is notice in this case. All we want is for when we identify confidential and proprietary information, as we've done in some documents already submitted.
So you're not asking for the opportunity to challenge that decision?
Well, when we get the notice,
right, okay,
then we would challenge it, and then it's appropriate to challenge it. Until then, it would be mind-boggling if you're hypothetically arguing about the legitimacy of every claim of confidentiality that you've asserted, unless and until the agency that has the records is about to release them. So we wouldn't be challenging unless and until EEOC told us that it proposes to release the information or use it, and what particular information it intended to use and to whom it intended to disclose it. Now, EEOC incorporates this policy into a back door and a front door. The compliance manual, section 83A, says, quote, information in ADEA files is disclosed under EEOC's FOIA regulations, close quote. And then it goes on to cite 29 CFR part 1610, which is appropriate because that's comparable to all of the other CFR regulations that other agencies have enacted to implement FOIA. But then it goes on to cite this very, very same federal regulations that I've just read. So when you put the two together, EEOC is saying we comply with FOIA by having a front door, which is pursuant to the CFR, and by having a back door, which is pursuant to the federal regulations, which means that we can release the documents to anybody we decide to release them to without notice and without advising the submitter that they're being released or about to be released. This is in violation of the Trade Secrets Act. The Trade Secrets Act prohibits federal employees from disclosing any documents that they have received during the course of their employment in any manner, quote, not authorized by law. EEOC acknowledges that the Trade Secrets Act is applicable, but it claims it's not violating the Trade Secrets Act. This is in page 9 of its response brief, that it says, it acknowledges that there's no dispute that, that the Trade Secrets Act bars actual release of trade secret information without prior notice to the submitter. Now, our case is a case in which we expect that EEOC will release our information and use our information that we have disclosed and that we are about to disclose once it has it. This case involves a situation in which the Venetian hired 4,400 people out of 44,000 applicants in 1999 when it had its mass hiring prior to opening. It's an age discrimination case. In order to determine whether there's adverse impact or age discrimination, you have to compare the ages of the universe from which the hires were made to the ages of the persons in the universe. We did not ask about age on the application, and we didn't even ask proxies about date of graduation from high school. There's nothing on the applications that indicates what the ages of the people who were not hired is. We do know the ages of the people who were hired because we asked them that information after they were hired. However, there's about 40,000 applicants who were not hired for which neither we nor EEOC has information about age. We have this information about these applicants on computer disks. We're prepared to give those computer disks to EEOC. EEOC has already told the court in the United States District Court in Nevada what it expects to do with these tapes. It's going to give them to the Social Security Administration and the Nevada State Department of Transportation. We don't think either of those agencies will run their tapes against our tapes, but the very fact that it's going outside the agency has been demonstrated already. We think that it's very possible EEOC, when floundering around with what to do with this information, will go to the unions in Las Vegas who would love to have this information and probably would be willing to run their data against the data in the Venetians. Regardless of whether this happens or is likely to happen, once EEOC has our confidential and proprietary information, it should not be shopping it around or disclosing it to anyone outside EEOC without first giving us notice that it intends to release the information or provide it to somebody outside the agency. That's what the nub of this case is all about.
Well, you have noticed that they intend to give it to the state of Nevada and the Social Security Administration.
Yes.
So have you taken steps to challenge that?
No, we haven't done that because EEOC doesn't have the data yet. The court over there stayed any further proceedings in that case pending this case. I know that Social Security won't do it because when I worked for EEOC, I tried to do the same thing and they wouldn't run their tapes against the tapes I got during discovery. So, but maybe they've changed. But anyway, for different reasons, I don't think those agencies will do what EEOC wants to do. But it's premature at this point to go doing anything about that. It's traditional for EEOC to use data that it obtains during an investigation to try to obtain other data, and EEOC has admitted this during arguments early in this case, and it's recognized by the district court. In his opinion, he's assumed that what we say is true, that EEOC releases confidential data without prior notice to the submitter.
And then he rejects each of your arguments.
Yes, he rejected our arguments because he didn't go to the linchpin for all our arguments, which was the APA. He said we have no standing to contest. We admit. We can't force a criminal action on EEOC for violating the Trade Secrets Act. But it's pretty clear in Chrysler Corporation versus Brown and other cases out of this court that by using the APA, the Administrative Procedures Act, 702, 704, and 706, we have a right to protect our data from disclosure to prevent the EEOC from violating the law. In that case, the Trade Secrets Act was an issue. The Supreme Court said the Chrysler Corporation didn't have a right to enforce the Trade Secrets Act because it's a criminal statute, but that it did and could use the Administrative Procedures Act as the vehicle to protect its right. And it ultimately ruled in favor of Chrysler in exactly the same kind of context that we're presenting. In that case, the Defense Logistics Agency did not have procedures to give notice to submitters of affirmative action programs prior to the time it released it, and Chrysler Corporation wanted to get notice and an opportunity to prevent release of information it gave over during the course of a compliance review.
All right, so when the district court, for instance, in dealing with Executive Order 12600...
Yes.
...says that EEOC has complied with the requirements of this order by publishing the disclosure notification procedures, citing 29 CFR 1610.19.
Yes. We've done it for the front door. But meantime, we have a back door. Yes, technically they've complied by saying, we have published regulations in 29 CFR section 1610.
Right.
Yes, but then those regulations under the FOIA, as you know, require notice to the submitter when the submitter has asserted confidential, that the documents are confidential. But if you have a back door, why is anyone going to go through the front door? You can ask EEOC to give you documents through Section 83, or you don't even have to invoke a section. Or EEOC can give documents to an outsider without advising.
And this is all under 1089?
This is all under 1089, and I haven't gone into Title VII because Title VII has different particular sections, but I'm just relying on the part that relates to the Age Act, because that's the only part that...
So I understand your point about you think the district court didn't deal with the APA, but it did assume that there was this backdoor policy, and yet it responded by saying, well...
Yes, but it was more that, yes, this may happen, but we don't have a right to say anything about it. And we think that in the first, this case was before this court before, and this court said we did have standing. We didn't have to wait until our documents were disclosed before we had, could come back to this court and say, see, they did what we told you that they would do, because by that time the harm would have already been done.
In that case, didn't we direct the district court to determine what the policy was?
Yes, and he didn't do what you told him to do.
So what is the policy? Is it the 87 or 92?
Has a front door and a back door, and the back door is that they will release documents that are confidential documents without notice to the submitter when they deem it appropriate or necessary to facilitate their administration of the Age Discrimination and Employment Act. They have
Is that the 87 iteration or the 92 iteration?
That's neither one. That's in both, because that's in the federal regulations that are part of their Privacy Act regulations. So that's part of both 87 and 92. It's not affected by which policy is being followed at all. Incidentally, in these same federal regulations I'm talking about, EEOC has set up a formal system for attorney referral lists. They have attorneys to whom they refer cases under the Age Act, and prior to the time they complete the processing of the case, when they think they have a good case, they call in an attorney to look at the file.
Now, basically, the district court took the position, as I understand it, even though you alerted to him to what this court's first opinion said, that he didn't need to do that, and it was sufficient for him to get a declaration from EEOC to bind them to their position. So EEOC submitted a declaration, and basically that declaration says, we comply with all these statutes. We've never encouraged people to give up data that would be contrary to the statutes on which you're relying.
If you read between, well, first of all, the way the judge on remand posed it, he said, I'm ordering you both to file motions for summary judgment. For purposes of the motions for summary judgment, I want you to assume that EEOC's policy is as the Venetian claims, that is, they release documents that are deemed confidential by the submitter without notice to the submitter. And then he said, and we're going to have the EEOC's policy established by somebody from EEOC submitting an affidavit as to what the policy is. So by setting the preface for the motions for summary judgment.
No, I understand that, but here's what I'm really trying to get at. If, in argument today, EEOC denies that there is this backdoor policy and sticks by this declaration, then is it your position that the case needs to go back again for the district court to do what we asked it to do initially, to determine this, what is this policy, and afford you the opportunity to have discovery?
We would like to avoid having to go back for another 2 years.
I understand. That's why I'm asking the question.
But if necessary, that's what would have to be done.
How do we avoid that is what I'm getting at.
Because there's enough in the record where EEOC admits that they release information. You have the regulations in the Federal Register. You have the admission by EEOC's counsel early in the case that, yes, we release information.
But the admission, are you referring to the admission that we refer to in the first opinion?
Yes, in the first.
But we said it was just unclear. Counsel wasn't that clear. Didn't help us determine what the policy was.
No, not an argument in this court. I'm talking about an argument in the District of Columbia where the EEOC attorney said, of course, we have to use information that we have to gain other information, because Judge Leon asked the EEOC attorney, I believe it was Mrs. Oren, whether they did what we said they did, and she said yes, but we only do it a little bit.
When did the declaration from Inzio come in?
He submitted that declaration, and then we both filed them.
Was that on remand, or was that the first one?
On remand.
Okay.
So
the record's been supplemented. The EEOC has said what it does, and it says it doesn't.
Yes,
it does.
But we have to read between the lines. Well, first of all,
I don't see why they acknowledge that they do what you said.
Yes. I mean, I think that they do, and I think that he tries to parse the words, but I think that exactly he does acknowledge that they release data. He certainly doesn't deny it, and we haven't had any.
Well, they've had 6 years to clarify their position, so
and
I think we're going to get
that's exactly it. And it's their burden to show they're not acting in an arbitrary and capricious manner, and they certainly are, because any time along this way they could have said, oh, we will protect your data. We'll give you notice. Here's a stipulation. The case goes away. We've been 6 years in litigation. That hasn't happened.
It's clear the policy is that they think they have good and sufficient reason for not giving you notice.
Yes, but I don't see what they've said. What they say is this would inconvenience us. That's what they.
I understand that, but they've given
Okay. Yes, well, Miranda warnings would also inconvenience the police, but we've had to have Miranda warnings. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. McCullough.
May it please the Court, good morning. Alan Birch on behalf of the EEOC. The EEOC manual, as currently constituted, does not violate any identifiable statutory standard, and that's really the core of this case.
No, the first time the case was here, the court said did not tie itself to the manual. It's the practice of the agency. And we remanded the case to determine for sure what that practice is. The practice and the manual are not the same thing.
That's right, Your Honor. The practice is
the practice that's in suit here.
That's right, Your Honor. But the manual is the focus of the attack by the casino.
The manual doesn't answer the questions.
That's right.
It answers some questions.
It answers some of the questions, yes.
All of the questions, but the record now with the declaration from, is it Inzio?
Yes, Inzio.
Tells us what you do.
That's right, Your Honor. The agency performs investigations, administrative investigations, similar to any number of agencies with subpoena power. During the course of those investigations, they occasionally interview witnesses and occasionally will show them documents from that they have gathered in their investigation. That's the limited nature.
They have been marked as confidential business information or trade secrets by the submitter.
Excuse me. Yes, some of those information may be so marked. That's right. And there is no.
There's no provision for notice.
There's no provision for
notice.
Well, in practice, the issue never comes up because the.
Well, yes, but it doesn't come up because you don't give notice.
In the case of the EEOC, this is the first time that the agency is aware of, and I'm aware of, that the agency has ever received information in one of these investigations that the submitter even deemed to be confidential commercial information. And So as a practical matter, no, it doesn't come up because the information is never marked, let alone actually is trade secrets information or confidential commercial information. That's part of the point here is that...
So there is no practice? Is that what you're saying?
Essentially, Your Honor. I mean, it just doesn't come up. And so that's why the agency has not, as a practical matter, has not created this notice provision to deal with the situation. I mean, this is not an agency like the SEC or the FCC.
I understand.
Or,
so in this case...
In that they are much more, those other agencies are much more likely to obtain trade secret information or have to deal with this issue on a regular basis. Even those agencies, to my knowledge, haven't set up procedures that have been requested by the Venetian.
So if the practice is one that reflects a history in which no one's ever claimed confidential information, no one asserted a right or an interest, and now that's before you, mm-hmm. You want to tell us that you will give notice so the case goes away?
Well, if the agency thought that the information had any chance of actually being that, then they would give it, then they would tee up some sort of a notice provision or something to focus a decision, to create a decision as to whether the information was confidential commercial information.
Think it's not?
If they think that there's, if it's,
it's been marked,
it's beyond the pale that it's not, then
the employer's made this assertion, and you look at it and you say this is not.
Then they would take their chances as to whether they're complying with the trade secrets.
You would take the employer's chances.
Well,
because you would release the data.
If they thought it,
chances, no risk to you. The risk is that it really is confidential business information to the detriment of the submitter.
Well, it would be a risk to the submitter. It would also be a risk to the agency employee who engaged in the disclosure under the Trade Secrets Act. If it were trade secret information, you look at cases like University of Pennsylvania, and they say, look, Congress has set out what it deems to be appropriate protections for this information governing the conduct of government employees. And that would apply fully to the conduct of the EEOC investigation, as explained in the NZO Declaration.
If the employee violates the Trade Secret Act, though, I think it's common ground, is it not, that the employer has no recourse from that? That's a criminal violation.
That's right, Your Honor.
So there's no recompense for the employer, and there's no control over whether the act is enforced against that employer.
I didn't quite understand the last bit.
Neither EEOC nor the employer could cause a sanction to be imposed under the Trade Secrets Act. The U.S. Attorney could.
That's right, Your Honor. It's a criminal statute. As explained in the University of Pennsylvania case, I mean, that's the protection that's in place. And that is what would give the agency pause from going ahead with a course of action that would risk that.
The claim here is that the policy that you've just outlined, which has applied to this new situation where this employer asserts confidentiality, the claim is that that is arbitrary and capricious in violation of the APA because it undercuts, without explanation, it undercuts the provisions of the Freedom of Information Act and is therefore contrary to law.
That's one interpretation of Venetian's claims, yes. I mean, this is not a FOIA case, which is what distinguishes it from many of the cases cited, like Chrysler. The key distinction...
As long as FOIA is out there with the procedures under Chrysler, mm-hmm. The claim is that to have this, what they call the backdoor, is without any explanation or justification thus far in the adopted by the commission is arbitrary and capricious.
But what requires the procedure, Your Honor? See, in FOIA, that's the key distinction. In FOIA, there is a structure in place that generates an agency decision that can be challenged. Here, there is no decision. They have not made any decision yet. Indeed, in the context of this case, it looks pretty absurd because the information...
It's the law of the case that we've got final agency action.
No, I understand that point, Your Honor. But the information at issue here is the position statements that they have turned in and the computer information.
Well,
and this seems to be...
In your brief,
unlikely to be the sort of information that would be shown to a witness.
I think in your brief and in the amicus's brief, you join issue over whether there's a good reason for the agency to continue, notwithstanding the employer's assertion, to continue to use this information as it does in settling cases and so on. Right? And the and in that brief, you asserted the rationale for the commission doing this. Has the commission ever adopted that rationale?
Which rationale are you referring to?
You said it was necessary to, in order to, for the agency to function properly, to be able to release this information to certain parties.
Well, it's necessary in the conduct of its investigation. It can become necessary in the conduct of its investigations to share certain information with witnesses. That's how it conducts the investigations.
Has the commission ever adopted a statement of policy on this?
I don't know, Your Honor. I would imagine that it would be unnecessary other than what they put in their routine uses regulation about the use of its information, that this is a standard modus operandi for conducting administrative investigations. You gather information through subpoena power. You occasionally take sworn statements of witnesses, and in the course of those sworn statements, you may or may not present them with information that you've obtained.
Okay, can we back up? I just want to be clear here. If the submitter marks a document as confidential, big bold letters at the top, what happens?
Well, it depends on many things, Your Honor. It depends on whether the agency wants to use that information in its investigation.
Well, let's assume the agency wants to use
Wants to use the information in its investigation. In this particular case, if they wanted to share it with a witness as a part of a sworn statement, then the agency would need to decide whether it was going to refrain on the basis that it might have the information, or it might actually be confidential or trade secret information. The agency could say the claim is obviously preposterous and proceed with the sworn statement, or the agency could send out notice to the submitter and say, we're contemplating a limited release in the form of showing this to a witness. Would you object?
So this is a standard procedure for all agencies conducting investigations, in other words. They get materials, they look at it. The submitter may claim a privilege of some sort. The agency then makes a determination internally about the validity of a privilege and then acts accordingly. And if it's wrong, it may suffer the consequences down the road.
If it takes option, you're asking two questions. Is it standard practice, for one?
No, I meant standard practice, just agencies generally.
That's what I mean. There's nothing in the record, but again, that goes to the, I mean, if this were the sort of claim that had merit, certainly they could point to examples of that. And especially with the wealth of other agencies that conduct investigations all the time that do involve trade secret information, where is the requirement? Where has it been standardized? Now, I can tell you it's not in the record, but I can tell you from conducting many, many years of administrative investigations that this sort of practice is common. I would hesitate to call it a standard practice for the reasons I just articulated.
Is it the practice of the EEOC to do what you just outlined?
Well, for the reasons I mentioned earlier with Judge Ginsburg, options 2 and 3 never come up as a practical matter because the information that they obtain is, with this one exception, never marked confidential, commercial, or trade secret information. But it's certainly an option on the table for them now in this investigation. They can proceed and take their chances as described in the University of Pennsylvania case, or they could send out a letter saying, we're poised to make this decision to release. How do you feel about it?
Is any of this in the, I don't recall any of this being in the brief, these sort of pragmatic considerations about how you handle the data?
No, Your Honor. The information, we touch upon it by references to the record, but Catherine Orm's argument in the district court the first time around is consistent with this. It does describe their practice of having investigations. It's certainly not the case where anyone can make a request under Section 83, as counsel for the Venetian styled it, and that the EEOC can sort of release it to whomever they want. That is clearly not their practice, never has been.
From your view of the record in this case, was it clear to the district court that this issue had never come up before the agency, as you have advised today?
Yes, Your Honor, I would assume so.
Do you see something in the record that indicates that?
Because
This is the first time I've heard that, is what I'm getting at. Doesn't mean that I've read every page of the record, but I just don't remember that. I mean,
yeah, I don't know the answer to that, but I would.
In other words, the remand.
My sense is that we would have pointed this out to the district court that that it is extremely unusual for this agency to be obtaining anything resembling trade secrets information.
But you said just a moment ago it's not your practice, but there's nothing in Section 83 or anywhere else that would prevent the agency from disseminating the information widely.
I would submit that that would violate the routine use provision, or could, which governs the use of the information for investigations, Your Honor. I mean, that's where we get the authority to share it with the witnesses to begin with, is that, you know, they have this statutory power and obligation to conduct these investigations, and the routine use regulation that Mr. McCulloch read into the record is written broadly enough to cover what they would do in their investigations, but certainly there's a limit on that.
And does the routine use provision, could it be read to authorize providing the data to a union if the union has an interest in the proceeding, if it represents the employees in the case?
I don't know, Your Honor. It might be, it's hard to see how.
If the union or anyone else were given access, given a copy of, or shown the information, would they be expected to agree that they would not share it further?
Well, it depends how they were asked, Your Honor. My hesitation.
But is there any protection? Suppose the employer has a legitimate trade secret. Let's say it's an unpatentable device or invention or something of some sort, business method, such that it would be very harmful for its competitors to see that. Now, the union represents its competitors' employees as well as its own.
Sure.
Okay? So what stops the union? The union may have a legitimate interest in this information vis-a-vis this employer and this dispute that you're or possible violation that you're investigating. What limits the union's ability to inform other employers about it?
But if the agency were to give it to them carte blanche, there would be no limit, Your Honor. But that's the whole point of cases like University of Pennsylvania. There is a strong disincentive on the agency to go down that road. And indeed, the facts of your hypothetical, if I may, illustrate just how odd that would be. The plans for a new invention are going to have very little to do with an employment discrimination claim. And so we're going to be
speaking. Actually, the employer gave an example here about calculating labor costs, which almost completely replicates some disputes that we've had in government contract cases.
And McDonnell Douglas, for example, yes.
So it could be very competitively very sensitive information. I agree, unlikely to be a patent. But it could be competitively quite valuable information.
Perhaps, Your Honor, it's hard to see how that would relate to claims of disparate treatment, except perhaps equal, unusual class action cases, perhaps. But it.
Well, let me ask you just if information like that, we have cases where the submitter comes in and gets a protective order from a court. What I'm unclear about is what the court is supposed to do in this case. Are we supposed to come up with sort of a hypothetical and say the agency ought to have some standards here? Or do we have to wait until something happens and the employer objects? Or is it enough now that the employer has objected on the basis that it has been asked by the agency to submit this information?
But that's why I think it's important to distinguish between the challenge to the practice and the challenge to the agency's action, which is one of the things that the Venetian has continually conflated. I mean, with respect to an actual release, there's no evidence that that's about to happen. There's been no decision that's going to happen. It doesn't make sense in this particular case that it ever would happen because of the nature of the information relative to the nation investigation.
And their point is, under the scheme they have, as they understand it now, they would never know if you made a decision and decided to release something.
They may not if, as I described, the information were released without notice, Your Honor. But again, that's more of a challenge to the practice rather than the actual release. It's important to keep those two separate. The practice is one that, as we've talked about, but it's the reliance on the Chrysler case fails when you look at the practice, because the Chrysler case specifically focuses on the agency decision rather than the underlying regulations or practice. Indeed, if you look at the Marshall concurrence explaining that, you'll see at the end of Chrysler that the APA cause of action goes to the decision in that case, which was a FOIA decision, and it did not reach the quote-unquote regulations themselves.
So is this a situation where the employer ought to petition the agency for rulemaking?
That would certainly be one way to go about it, Your Honor. That's what they suggest in their brief, that it would be necessary to have a notice and comment rulemaking. Under the logic of Chrysler, that would be the sort of thing that would trigger the except as authorized by law exception to the Trade Secrets Act, which is an argument we've never made and don't rely on.
Is there any way they can seek protection when the documents are first requested, if they know they have confidential information before they release it to you? Is there any mechanism to protect them that way?
There's no formal mechanism, but the mechanism that they employed of marking the information would be
But at that point, that's not enough. What is there to protect them from a mistake that you all make when you decide to release something that's marked confidential? You think it is not confidential, and you're wrong.
Yeah, that's the Trade Secrets Act, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. And I would point your attention to the University of Pennsylvania case on that. Marking something confidential would go a long way to establishing some sort of an intent to actually trigger the Trade Secrets Act, mm-hmm. and would put the agency on notice that if they did release it, that the case against them would be a lot stronger than in the absence of that marking. Mm-hmm. And so that would provide more of a disincentive. Mm-hmm.
But you agree, I'm sure, with Mr. McCulloch that it would be bootless to have any mechanism for determining whether the information is confidential, unless you've reached some decision that you want to share it with somebody. I mean, just doesn't make any sense.
That doesn't make any sense. Yes. Yes.
You agree with that.
I agree with that. If there are no further questions, we would ask the court to affirm the judgment below. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rich.
If Your Honor's please, on rebuttal. One of the things EEOC said is that submitters don't raise this issue. If you read the amicus brief, people submitting information, EEOC requests broad information. Many employers are requesting identifying documents as confidential. You get six.
Are they all your clients, Mr. Phil?
I wish. But succession planning charts, earnings rates, and in this case we have earnings rates, and that's very crucial information. What we pay our employees, the total compensation package is there. There's many.
Is that just because it's in that file, or was it requested?
No, it's requested. They've requested everything that we gathered with respect to the people not hired and the people hired and relating to their employment thereafter. Now, they say, well, if we make a mistake in the initial instance and something was a trade secret and confidential, and we considered it not confidential and released it, well, and one of our employees violated the Trade Secrets Act. There's a world of difference in this situation. In their brief, they say, we don't have a rule saying don't intimidate witnesses, but it's obvious that we don't permit. Here, they have a rule saying use confidential information or anything else you have if you deem it necessary or appropriate to pursue your duties under the Age Act. A person would not.
Is that consistent with the declaration?
Mr. Inizio makes conclusions, legal conclusions in there. I don't know where the basis for those legal conclusions.
Well, as I understood the district court, it was getting this declaration so it would bind the agency as to what its position is.
The district court requested that affidavit when it already decided that for purposes of this case it was going to assume that EEOC releases confidential and proprietary information without notice to the submitter.
No, I understand. I understand that point. But Mr. Inizio does say they never directed EEO employees to disclose.
But the regulations are, you see, what?
Nothing.
Without
any policy, regulation, rule, guidance, or instruction.
Well, if you read the federal regulations, it says when you have information obtained under the Age Act, and it goes in, if you look in the 56 Federal Register section, it describes a broad range of documents that an EEOC would obtain under the Age Act from employers, and what do you do with them? You use them if you deem it necessary and appropriate to do your work under the investigation.
No, but, I mean, the point I thought he was making is that we don't tell our employees to violate the law because they think they could use something that's necessary for an investigation. They say,
well, why don't
comply
they just
with the law, and once you make the determination, then you can use it for your investigation.
Then there's no reason for them to put in that part about when you deem it appropriate or necessary, you can use this information and disclose it. There's no reason for them to have the attorney referral list.
But there's no reason for them to issue a policy that is blatantly saying violate the law.
But they, since they've already taken these positions publicly, and since they already do release confidential documents, there has to be something on record. I think in the federal,
you say they've released confidential documents. How do we know that?
They have said during argument that they do it.
Well, the attorney here said this has never come up before.
Your Honor, I think it's being naive.
Well,
if you read the, if you read the.
But the question is, what is in the record to show that the agency previously has released confidential information?
We have the
We're all speculating here. That's what I'm trying to focus on.
No.
No?
We're not speculating. We have their own regulations. We know what they do. We have their own regulations which indicate what they're allowed to do. What Your Honor asked what should happen. They should have to issue regulations and publish regulations that are in compliance with the FOIA and close any methods for release of confidential data that's identified as confidential under the executive order of 12,600 or pursuant to FOIA, other than through FOIA.
Let me just make sure.
This
the
issue.
Agency, if the agency wants to disclose something for which it has not received a FOIA request, but in the course of its work, it
yes.
disclose something. The Privacy Act and the Privacy Act system of records contemplates that they may legitimately have occasion to do that, correct?
That's what their Privacy Act regulations say.
And it seems to me that what you just said a moment ago is asking for something much more than they're giving you an opportunity to object. You seem to be asking for a bar.
Oh, no. I was misunderstood then.
If you object, and if it's determined that the information is confidential business information, that surely can't be the end of the matter. They may still have a legitimate reason to disclose it.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, I want to make that clear.
All we are looking for
is that as things now stand, they have an established policy which, if applied to your information, to confidential information without giving you notice, may result in their releasing the information to your detriment in a way that they could not and have not thus far justified as necessary for their functioning.
Yes. They are making up their interpretation about different the Trade Secrets Act and FOIA and different laws, and there's no deference, they're not entitled to any deference in this regard. They interpret Title VII and the Age Act, but they don't interpret or have any deference entitled to them or due to them when they interpret FOIA and the APA and different law and the Trade Secrets Act and different laws that are applicable.
If they gave more content, more precision to what is now in their PASR routine use list, that might very well might not simply preclude an employer from contesting the release of some information.
I don't think, what the standard they would have to meet is the Trade Secrets Act, which says you cannot release information unless otherwise authorized by law. I don't think that EEOC has an...
So you think that could not be a routine use?
I don't, when you go otherwise authorized by law, FOIA is otherwise authorized by law, they can release it under FOIA. When you go further and you have EEOC issuing, well, first of all, when they have rules and regulations that they don't know which is enforced anyway, it's hard to give deference to something that they don't even know. One is from 1992 and one's from 1987, and one has been approved by the commission and one is, doesn't even, the commissions don't even know about it. That's not a way an agency establishes policy with clarity. But
is there any daylight between the Trade Secrets Act and confidential business information?
No, they're contiguous. This court has already held that the Trade Secrets Act and Exemption 4 of FOIA are co-equal. They're the same thing. So there's no space in between the Trade Secrets Act and Exemption 4. This issue did come up before in Associated Dry Goods.
So in other words, if the information is... in your view, if the information is covered by the Trade Secrets Act, then there's no circumstance in which they can release that under limitations to anyone?
No, they can release it if they give notice to the, if they're pursuing, if they're handling the matter pursuant to the FOIA.
No. There's no FOIA request. They have some information from you.
We've identified it as confidential and proprietary and trade secrets.
Right. And they say, okay, it is a trade secret, but it's also something that is necessary in the ordinary functioning of our office here to share this with a complainant or whatever.
Then our position is they have to give us notice.
Oh, I understand that. You've given you notice. And they
acknowledge
it's a trade secret. Nonetheless, we want to share it with somebody.
Sure. Then we get our day in court. Then we would come to court. If we could not convince EEOC otherwise, then we would come to...
convince them. They say, you're right, it's a trade secret.
Oh, okay. Then, and you're going to release it nonetheless because your need to release it outweighs...
To release it. To
possibly they could prevail.
And we're going to extract from them a no further release.
Possibly they could prevail, but we would have had our day in court. And that's the most important
and
thing.
And if they could prevail, what's the standard that that the court would be applying to
I don't know. I don't. That's a case that we would like to have because we don't have it yet. And the way things work, we would never have it because EEOC is releasing documents without notice. And this is not standard practice, incidentally, for other agencies. We've noted what
you
other agencies.
You mentioned in brief a bunch of them that you said do.
Yes, we've noted many.
Is that because there's nothing, you can't find anything in the Federal Register saying they do it? How do you know they don't do it?
Well, because of we've researched under FOIA and shepherdized and used Lexis under FOIA and all of these different laws, and we've came up with all those other cases showing what other agencies do in this situation. If you take EEOC at its word, we gave an example. If an executive of Shell makes a complaint against ExxonMobil and as a result triggers an investigation and gets their confidential pricing information, and the FTC releases it to the executive of Shell without notice to ExxonMobil, that would be unheard of. But this is a comparable situation because the information that employers submit to EEOC and OFCCP as part of investigations is very confidential and can give a competitive advantage. I've focused on our concern about the unions, but we have other concerns about how competitors could use our pricing information and different things like that. And incidentally, in the earlier case, this court already said that EEOC said, well, we don't have any confidential information already. And this court said, we disagree and rejected that contention at 366 of 409 Fed Third. So this court has already disagreed with EEOC's contention that it does not yet have confidential information.
What page is
It's on page... 366 of the prior opinion. The court said, EEOC disputes Venetian's demonstrated hardship by reading the operative complaint to plead that the commission has not yet obtained sensitive and, any sensitive documents from Venetian. EEOC submits that allegations contained in the Rosenberg Declaration change the factual underpinnings of the case. We disagree. And then the court went on to discuss what parts of the complaint it felt it disagreed. And the district court, in its first opinion, found that the information that EEOC already had was confidential.
Right, I finally caught up with you as to 366, but where is it?
Oh, it's, it starts with the part that says EEOC disputes...
Oh, yes. Anything further?
No, Your Honor, thank you.
Mr. Birch, thank you, too. Case is submitted.